Welcome back, my dears. I hope, however, you spent that time, again, that it was nurturing, of benefit in some way. And as I mentioned, we'll just move right into the sit. So I ask you to close your eyes, or again, drop the gaze, and allow the energetics of your body to kind of meet a sense of alertness, awakeness, availability in the physical body. Again, maybe sitting, maybe lying down, that's less important. But can we kind of, in a way, energetically meet the nobility of these practices, of these teachings? We are ennobled by the teachings, and that they really show us or invite us to live with an open heart, steady mind. So letting the body come into a posture that feels sustainable for half an hour, but also an uprightness, an availability to yourself, to the practice. And for our anchor this morning, this afternoon, this evening, for some, keep the attention in the body. Seeing mindfulness of the body and the invitation of coming home into the body can sound lovely. And I'm very aware for those of us with significant trauma histories might be like, oh yeah, no. So just tempering this notion of coming home to the body with what feels reasonable. We may be able to land fully, we may be able to land a little. So again, this deeper invitation of meeting ourselves how we are, without needing to push, without needing ourselves to be otherwise. Just the sense of in this moment, this is what's possible. We may be able to arrest attention in the hands, as we did last week, so the hands holding themselves, each other. Resting attention of hands on the legs, the weight, the shifting temperatures that will happen over time. We may want to rest the attention, as I invited us before, in the earth element, the bones. The skull, the vertebrae, the jawbone, the shoulder bones, clavicle, rib cage, long bones of the arm, down into the pelvic bowl, long bones of the legs, tiny bones of the hands and feet, resting here in the bones, the skeletal form, our earth element, this relative stillness and steadiness. Can we rest here? Oh, yeah. Resting in the bones. Nowhere else to go, nothing else to do. Allowing, if this makes sense, the attention to sit in these bones of ours. Like, and again, that it, hands holding each other, hands on the legs, it's the same invitation. Bones resting on bones as a way of anchoring ourselves in the body, in the earth element, saying, here, I'm here. The mind will do what it does, pull us off perhaps in different directions with stories, complaints, judgments, to-do lists. Okay. At some point, we remember, oh, right, meditating, we come back to the body. And that's a beautiful moment of awareness. To be celebrated. Oh, right. And I wake back up to the teachings, to the commitment to practice. Okay. And then at some point, we'll get pulled off again. We realize it, come back. Again, these themes of gentle awareness, gentle curiosity. This is how it is just now in this moment and in the next. Please remember there's no such thing as a bad sit. We come, we take our seats, we see how it is. Staying with this gentle, open awareness and curiosity. Oh, in this moment, it's just like this. Okay. It may be pleasant, it may be unpleasant. So nice. Thank you for ringing the bell, Carlita. And again, how are you all? Lovely to be able to have this time with you. And today I want to sort of stay on the theme that we touched upon last week. Last week was a little bit more focused on the mind and the sort of phrase of how do we find the reliable narrator amongst the what can feel like the cacophony or symphony within the mind. Yeah, some are trustworthy voices and some are not. And I want to kind of carry that forward, but more to allow us to explore our relationship to being in body. And again, this notion of body as home. And that's not, it's easier to say than actually to experience. But I'm going to start with a blessing, I suppose, from John O'Donohue. Coming home to yourself, may all that is unforgiven in you be released. May your fears yield their deepest tranquilities. May all that is unlived in you blossom into a future graced with love. May it be so, yeah. But what I love about this is the naming of one of the challenges as we move through life and at a certain point, that makes me think to interrupt that sentence, the Alice Miller quote that I will not get, that I'll paraphrase. I'm sorry, you can go on about your life doing whatever you want to do, but at some point, the body presents the bill. And sort of the ways that we've betrayed or ignored or not listened to ourselves or the traumas that we've experienced, the causes and conditions that we were born into in this life, take the toll on the body. Yeah. And our incongruency with that, the way we've kind of cast aside or not pay attention to or buried or exiled different parts of us, sometimes has to do with, can we forgive ourselves? Can we forgive ourselves for choices that we made that didn't go the way we thought they were going to go? Can we forgive our lives for not unfolding in the way we may have imagined when we were young? This is the natural course of things, right? In this realm, first noble truth, there's suffering. Dissatisfaction, dukkha can be like dissatisfaction, disappointment, suffering, you know, that it's not an easy ride for sure, as we know. And over time, how do we work with sort of the accumulated baggage in a way? There's a story or a saying by David White that I can't quite recall where I heard it, but he would talk about, we kind of carry this suitcase behind us like a duffel bag, and we keep putting stuff in it and putting stuff in it. When we're young, it's like, oh, whatever, just carry it, it's no big deal, it's like a little backpack. But as years, decades go by, that can be a massive duffel bag, and we're kind of struggling with it. And what I love about John O'Donohue's blessing here is he's like, let's put that down. How can we forgive ourselves to release ourselves? May all that is unforgiven you be released. May your fears yield their deepest tranquilities. Yeah, the ways that fears, particularly now with fears of floods or snowfall of epic proportions or banks crashing, closing. There's a lot of potential fears, yeah, that we've been living with for years. And I suppose humans have always lived with this, but it does seem last 6, 7, 8 years, it seemed particularly acute of these external things that I used to take for granted that now are kind of shaky. So the fears around relating to the external world and all of its changes, but also the internal fears that maybe from childhood that still may be here or that just linger. In kind of a hidden way that they're unknown or they're exiled. And this beautiful idea, like may the deepest, may they be released into yield the deepest tranquility. So there's a movement from the fear into tranquility when we give ourselves permission to process it and move through. Because there can be a conditioning when we're kids of like, oh no, not that. If I step into those fears, I will be so overwhelmed. If I step into that grief, I will be so overwhelmed, I can't handle it. Which is why sometimes we have help and we have guardians and allies of various forms. The line of Annie Lamont's that I love is that the mind is like a bad neighborhood. I try not to go there alone. Sometimes we need others there with us. And that it's not just the mind, but sometimes the body is carrying things that's just so painful and often seemingly unknowable. Yeah. There's a way we can sort of numb out, like, I'm fine. And yet, There are these things under the surface that can concretize and get stuck, and we can get sick. So how do we begin to turn towards ourselves with this real gentle sweetness? And I've been in conversations with some friends and folks about this notion of self-care. You really need to take care of yourself. I mean, how often do people say that to you, or you say those words? Yeah. But what does that actually mean? And we can go to therapy and we can meditate and do yoga and practice and eat kale and all these things on the checklist of self-care, which sometimes works. But it's also, how do we align with an attitude of actually caring for the interior landscape of our lives, the parts that are scared or angry or grief struck. And it's tempting, and some of us may have the habit of, yeah, no, I don't have time for that. I don't want to go there. I don't need to go there. I'm fine. I'm good enough. And we kind of keep those parts of ourselves exiled and at arm's length. And I think as we potentially expand our notion of self-care, it's like, oh, can we care for all of these parts? And often in the beginning of our class, Carlita, I will talk about all parts of you are welcome here. Like the grouchy part, the part that doesn't want to be here, the parts that scare, the parts that is grief-stricken, in addition to the parts that are delighted and joyous and tempered or whatever, that there's a full range that's welcome here. And can we also offer that to ourselves when habitually, maybe not, yes, this, but not that. I don't want to go there. I don't want to feel that. It's too scary. It's too scary to go there alone. Okay. Well, who would you like there with you? And it can be a guardian, sort of in a human form, or spiritual allies, animals, nature, huge. But being able to have enough vulnerability and honesty to be like, I can't actually go there. That line of like, there be dragons, you know, beyond that line be dragons. Okay. So who do we want to help us befriend the dragons? Yeah. We all, I'm going to guess, have those lines on the map, a bar in our map. Yeah. It's like, I'll go up to there and then exhale. Oh, sweetie. Yeah. It's scary, right? There are parts within us that are scary. Okay. So we come to Sangha here, yeah, to feel into the sisterhood that meets week after week for almost two decades, you know, and looking for ways that we have support that maybe not in the fantasy of what we have, but it's again, sort of the chair beneath us support, the earth beneath us support, training the mind to look for what is supportive, right? As opposed to the lack, I don't have it, I don't have this. So shifting our perspective can be a really useful way, or just looking at, well, what is the story I'm telling myself about being supported? I don't have any support, there's no one, I'm by myself. It may feel that way, okay? And is it possible to open up the awareness? Well, I am sitting on a couch, there's support. The earth is supportive. The beauty of the natural world, if we allow ourselves to take that in, can be supportive if we allow it. May it be enough? Maybe, maybe not, but it's that first inklings of, oh yeah, this. Oh yeah, this. By Rilke, she who reconciles. She who reconciles the ill-matched threads of her life. She who reconciles the ill-matched threads of her life and weaves them gratefully into a single cloth. It's she who drives the loudmouths from the hall and clears it for a different celebration where the one guest is you. In the softness of evening, it's you she receives. You are the partner of her loneliness, the unspeaking center of her monologues. With each disclosure, you encompass more, and she stretches beyond what limits her to hold you. I love this. The ill-matched threads of our lives and weaving them gracefully into a single cloth, driving the loudmouths from the hall. Yeah. And that's sometimes what we need to do to be able to really reflect with the tools of the practice of, this is what it's like to sit with ourselves. Yeah. Resting in the body, in the earth element, or the other elements of water and fire and space. wind. This is how we sit with ourselves, watching our breath. You know, the mind gets too busy. Okay, we direct the attention somewhere else. We cultivate our capacity to direct our attention. It's phenomenal. It's miraculous. This whole perseverating around what I'm scared about or upset about or freaked out about can be so seductive and, I don't know, sort of drop us into the rabbit hole. And remembering, oh, I have a choice. I can redirect the attention. I can reach into the other skills we spoke about. Sometimes it's music or calling someone or going out in nature. I can have agency of where my mind goes. It may not always feel that way. Yeah. So we practice when it's not so hard for those times where it's like, oh, this is intense. Okay. We have the capacity. We are strengthening week after week our capacity to direct our attention, to aim and sustain, right? Miraculous. From Tony Hoagland, the word. Down near the bottom of the crossed out list of things you have to do today, between green thread and broccoli, you find you have penciled sunlight. Resting on the page, the word is as beautiful. It touches you as if you had a friend in sunlight were a present he sent you from some place distant as this morning to cheer you up and to remind you that among your duties, pleasure is a thing that also needs accomplishing. Do you remember that time and light are kinds of love? And love is no less practical than a coffee grinder or a safe spare tire. Tomorrow, you may be utterly without a clue, but today you get a telegram from the heart in exile proclaiming that the kingdom still exists, the king and queen alive, still speaking to their children, to anyone among them who can find the time to sit out in the sun and listen. Right? So lovely. That these to-do lists that we make, pleasure is not often on the list. Joy is not often on the list. Fun rarely is on the list. And these are imperative words to start putting on the list, particularly when it can be as simple as, oh, sunlight. Those of us in parts of the States and maybe in Europe may not be seeing much of sunlight. Fair enough. Okay, but something that's beautiful and accessible. The low-hanging fruit of what is pleasurable, what is beautiful, what may bring joy. It doesn't mean an expedition somewhere, yeah, or organizing something. It's just, oh, wait, is something in my, do I find something in my house beautiful? Probably we all do. Can I take it in? Oh, yeah, that's pleasure. Right. It helps right the scales that we lean into, but you know, if it's the negativity bias or whatever we want to say, there's a lot to be stressed out about and worry about. So we've got that ground covered. We don't need to practice worrying anymore or having anxiety. That we got. Many of us, not all of us. So how do we incline the mind to that which is beautiful, that which is joyful, that which is, makes us whole? And joy is tricky. It's not easy. It's not always something that we don't talk about it that much, really. It's not something that we set out in the morning to cultivate joy. Some of us might, but it can kind of be, oh, like it's too frivolous or something. And you all know, I talk about the Dalai Lama and Desmond Tutu's book, Every Chance I Get, and the centrality of joy to our well-being. I cannot be underestimated, yeah. But it takes work. In practice, and it's one of the four divine abodes, the Brahmaviharas of loving kindness, which we talk about a fair amount, not just here, but in general, the classes at Spirit Rock, compassion, Karuna, sympathetic joy, Mudita. Yeah, it's one of the trainings that we can practice with, the equanimity being the fourth. These are the four divine abodes of the heart. Yeah. And joy is an attitude. It's a way of moving in the world. It's a way of strengthening our and not quite attitude, our stance, how we stand. Can I look for what is joyful, what is beautiful, and notice the results? It's like, don't take my word for it. You know, this is very clear what the Buddha said, like, don't check it out. Hipassiko, come see, check it out. You know, check it out. What happens when we incline the mind towards that which is beautiful, that which is joyful? And again, not the the grand gestures. That's lovely, but that can be a lot of work. This isn't about work. This is just about a little bit of a shift in perspective. Because I would posit the more access we have to joy, the more access we have to a softening of that the world around us is beautiful and also terrible, right? We know both are true. But if we can nudge ourselves over a little bit into that which is beautiful, it's a lot easier to look at the scarier places within ourselves. If we can rest in our own good nature, our own Buddha nature, to speak in this vernacular, that's really just our own goodness, the goodness of our own heart. This is our birthright. Steady, open heart, quiet, steady mind. These are our, this is what we're born with. And then we get all messed up. And our closest gets hurt and broken and defended, and the mind gets crazy and filled with too much information and stress and worry. Okay, we undertake the practice, quiet, open the heart. Not so easy, but this is what we are undertaking. Yeah. And in so doing, that we can cultivate a sense of generosity to ourselves, like, oh, I can stay here with myself, a generosity of time. You know, time is a gift, whatever the line from the poem was. Can we accept, oh, wait, I can spend some time with myself, even the scary parts, as long as I feel like I have the allies I need. Again, allies defined in any which way. Sometimes it's a human in the form of a therapist or a counselor or a minister or a best friend or a relative. Sometimes it's in the form of a dog, another animal, a tree, natural place, somewhere that's beautiful. And I guess that really one of the themes here is just the healing nature of that which is beautiful by how our eyes take it in. Yeah. What do we see that's beautiful? How does that nurture us? And in nurturing the heart, we have more capacity to lean into the parts that scare us. The Healing Time by Prisha Gertler. Finally, on my way to yes, I bump into all the places where I said no to my life. All the untended wounds, the red and purple scars, those hieroglyphs of pain carved into my skin, my bones, these coded messages that send me down the wrong street again and again, where I find them, the old wounds, the old misdirections, and I lift them one by one close to my heart and I say, holy, holy. Right? This is what we do. Can we tend to these wounds, these scars carved into my skin and bones? Understand we get misdirected by them, these old wounds. We lift them up one by one close to the heart and say, holy, holy, this is who makes us who we are. This is what gives us our strength, that which we have persevered through, the challenges that we've met. We're all here. We have survived thus far. Right? And being able to look at the mistakes, the misdirections, the choices in hindsight we might not make a second time, to be like, okay, I needed to learn this. Whatever it is, we may not be able to identify it yet, but allowing these to be held up, held close. Holy, holy, right? This is the experience of being human. Yeah. By Julia Fehrenbacher, The Most Important Thing. I am making a home inside myself, a shelter of kindness, where everything is forgiven, everything allowed, a quiet patch of sunlight to stretch out without hurry, where all that has been banished is and buried is welcomed, spoken, listened to, released. A fiercely friendly place I can claim as my very own. I am throwing arms open to the whole of myself, especially the fearful, the fault-finding, falling apart, unfinished parts, knowing every seed and weed, every drop of rain has made the soil richer. I will light a candle, pour a cup of tea, gather around the warmth of my own blazing fire, I will howl if I want to, knowing this flame can burn through any perceived problem, any prescribed perfectionism, any lying limitation, every heavy thing. I am making a home inside myself where grace blooms in grand and glorious abundance, a shelter of kindness that grows all the truest things. I whisper hallelujah to the friendly sky. Watch now as I burst into blossom. So I invite you to close your eyes. And on this eve of spring, where we will soon be seeing so many things burst into blossom, let's take a moment to come back into your body. It's a lot of words. Feel yourself sitting, feet on the ground. How is this body of yours doing in this moment? And what might it be like to make a home inside yourself, a shelter of kindness, where everything is forgiven? Picturing within yourself a quiet patch of sunlight to stretch out in. What's it feel like? Is there a relaxing into this idea? Is it like, oh wait, no. Some aversion may come up, just noticing. What might this home inside yourself look like? For the poet's invitation, a patch of sunlight. Or may the shelter of friendliness and kindness may have a different look. But I want to invite each one of us to picture this shelter of kindness, this fiercely friendly place. Where the truest of things grow. What's it look like? The cabin in the woods, the yurt, a patch of grassy sunlight by a mountain stream. And letting the picture become as clear as it can be. Several may appear, and you might have a different answer tomorrow. But just to allow a sense of reality, what would this home look like? So that it can be returned to and visited and that you can move in. Yeah. What does your own interior shelter of kindness look like? The roof, the walls, the floor, the window, is there a particular smell? It's the play of light. Is anyone there with you, human or animal or otherwise? What are you sitting upon? What's beneath your feet? Are there sounds? Allowing each sense door to have a say in this shelter of kindness and of this fiercely friendly place, this home within yourself. What are the colors, the textures, the tastes, the sounds, the smells? What do you see? That this can be our own personal refuge. A place to return to time and again. A place where we can grow the seeds of truth about ourselves. We can tend to our own garden with safety and trust and faith in our capacity to meet whatever comes. Faith in our capacity of our own goodness, our own wisdom, the truth of who we really are, distinct from the fears, the worries, the anxiety, the hindrances that cloud our true nature. Welcome home. So I'm going to stop here. And thank you for your kind attention.